From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the governor and legislative leaders pass an on-time budget for the fourth year in a row, but it has its share of critics. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the plan to test public campaign financing in the next state controller's race, and the state's environmental community reacts to funding for conservation and environmental programs in the budget. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo and legislative leaders are touting the virtues of the newly enacted state budget, but the spending plan has its share of critics. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Governor Cuomo says one of the most important accomplishments achieved by himself and the legislative leaders is that the budget was passed on time for the fourth year in a row. And he used a baseball metaphor, complete with baseballs and bats for props, to describe the feat.
This is the Grand Slam budget, and I'm pleased and proud to be part of it. Last time you had an administration team produce four on-time budgets, you have to go back about 40 years.
Since the days of Governor Nelson Rockefeller, Cuomo also highlighted a tax credit program for homeowners, a plan for expanded pre-kindergarten and more help for charter schools, as well as an over 5% increase in school aid.
Some people say it's never enough. Maybe it is never enough, but 5.3% by any realistic scale is a great investment.
But the budget is attracting its share of criticism. An ethics deal has been universally condemned by government reform groups who say Cuomo gave away too much for too little. Cuomo agreed to end a Moreland Act panel that was investigating the legislature for corruption. In exchange, he got stronger anti-bribery laws and some greater disclosure of some campaign donations. He also got a pilot program for public campaign finance limited to the state controller's office. Blair Horner of the New York Public Interest Research Group, as well as others, say that plan is unworkable.
The governor and the legislative leaders have concocted a public financing scheme which is designed to fail. There's no two ways about it.
Cuomo says his critics should instead be looking on the bright side.
You can celebrate that this is the greatest advancement that has been made, or you can say we're disappointed that we haven't had a total victory.
And the governor says the bottom line is that there are currently not enough votes in both houses of the legislature to approve a broader public campaign finance package that would apply to all statewide races, including the governor's. And he says unlike same-sex marriage and gun control legislation, where he was able to persuade a number of Republicans to vote yes, people's minds are already made up on this issue.
Public finance, somebody has deeply held views that it's the wrong direction to go. Ran for office telling people, I will never support it. You know, it is an issue.
Senator Jeff Klein, the leader of a group of breakaway Democrats who lead the Senate in a governing coalition with Republicans, is under intense pressure over the campaign finance issue. Klein, who attended the bill signing ceremony, says he's not giving up, and he says he'll try to persuade some of his GOP colleagues to change their minds in the coming weeks.
I don't think we're done yet. I believe that we need to be committed to passing a more comprehensive campaign finance system before the close of the legislative session.
Cuomo's opponent in the 2014 race for governor, Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, also delivered a critique of the budget.
This is a typical Albany election year gimmick budget. Winners are the politicians, the losers are the vast New Yorkers who, again, will continue to pay the highest property taxes, highest income taxes. Businesses that are struggling are going to continue to struggle. And so it is the same old status quo here in New York.
Astorino says the plan for the property tax rebate check due out in October shortly before Election Day does nothing to change the equation, and he says the real issue of unfunded state mandates was not addressed in the budget. Cuomo's response when asked about Astorino's comments was brief.
Yeah, that's nice.
Astorino was at the Capitol to speak at a protest against the gun control law approved by Cuomo and the legislature last year. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Governor Cuomo and New York lawmakers are being criticized by good government advocates for a budget agreement that tests public campaign financing only with the state comptroller's race and only for 1 year. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The comptroller-only plan that was passed is really very flawed.
Common Cause New York Executive Director Susan Lerner says it's back to business as usual with the governor's blessing. The $140 billion spending plan signed Tuesday morning includes testing public campaign finance in the state comptroller race this year. Common Cause stands with a list of other good government groups expressing disappointment that the pilot program doesn't go far enough. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, a Democrat facing re-election with no declared challenger in November, will need to decide soon whether to participate in the program. DiNapoli, a longtime proponent of public financing, once proposed to use the comptroller campaign as a trial balloon for a publicly financed campaign. In 2011, the Assembly passed a bill authorizing the experiment, but it failed to become law. DiNapoli has reservations about the new plan.
Contributions from statewide political committees, the state committees, that's not addressed in the way that it was in our bill. The limits are higher than we had first proposed. I mean, you go down the long list, there just seems to be a lot of questions, very much subject to interpretation.
The plan would use the comptroller's own unclaimed funds as a source to pump up the campaigns and require the comptroller to sign off on spending the money, something DiNapoli contends is clearly a conflict of interest. Alex Camardo with Citizens Union says the comptroller-only solution is really a solution to yesterday's problem.
Because corruption is centered in the legislature and has been in recent years, that the budget should have included a more expansive public matching program rather than the one that was passed.
Larry Norton, deputy director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center at NYU, believes this was the best chance in a generation to deal with Albany's corrupt culture.
We're especially disappointed with the governor's decision to shut down the Moreland Commission on public corruption, which he set up to deal with the problem. They thoroughly documented the corrosive impact of big money over New York's policy decisions. Their top systemic recommendation was for comprehensive campaign finance reform, including the adoption of a statewide small donor matching system.
Some observers critical of the budget provision argue it effectively sets up the comptroller, not seen as a close ally of the governor, as some sort of a lab rat to be experimented with for public financing of political campaigns. NYPERG's Blair Horner says the program is designed to fail. The group says if DiNapoli decides to participate, he will be required to either set aside or return 73% of the $2.1 million his campaign has in cash on hand. NYPERG calculates the bill would force a candidate who opts in to transfer to another account or refund the portion of any donations in excess of $6,000. In a year that sees the entire state government up for election, DiNapoli remains stymied and displeased.
This is going to be set up now, supposedly in the near future, by the State Board of Elections, which has had other problems in terms of their current responsibilities. There's much that needs to still be interpreted to understand what the ground rules would be. Certainly, as we are heading very close to September, which is the prime, assuming that it's going to be a September primary, and then November, you know, we've been well into this cycle, this four-year cycle of raising money. What happens to money that's already been raised?
Larry Norton has a stern warning for New Yorkers.
Unless the governor and legislature find a way to revive the promise of campaign finance reform in the coming weeks, we're all New Yorkers going to live with the consequences of the failure.
Time will tell. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
The recently enacted state budget, Alan, also marks the end of the commission that was investigating public corruption in the legislature. Cuomo has agreed to dismantle the Moreland Act panel as part of a deal on ethics reform. What do you make of that?
Well, personally, I'm appalled by it, and I think a lot of people are. You know, you had a commission that was established to look into corruption in government. It was doing its job. It was sending out subpoenas. It was only halfway there. And now, in order to get the legislature to go along, the governor says he dismantles the Moreland Act Commission. However, in the beginning, in the middle of all of the Moreland Act work, we hear from our friend Ken Lovett at the New York Daily News that they were calling in the plays from the second floor of the governor's office, telling the commission what to do and what not to do and who to issue subpoenas to. So again, it doesn't pass the smell test. The idea that you would set up a commission and then you would rip its guts out before it had a chance to report fully and to say this is where the corruption exists really is very, very suspect.
Finally, Alan, some pushback from the state comptroller in New York on a plan in the budget to test his office in the next election for public campaign financing.
Look, Tom DiNapoli was the first person, David, who said that they could start with the controller's race. But they did it in such a haphazard way and in a last-minute way. And clearly there has never been a good relationship between the governor and Tom DiNapoli, that it really is suspect. They've asked the Board of Elections to do it. The Board of Elections can hardly get out of its own way. It probably can't really be done correctly. And I think that DiNapoli, who actually wants a campaign finance, would have to give up a great deal of whatever little money he's collected in order to go into this thing. So is it political retribution from Cuomo or not, we don't really know. But what we can say is that it doesn't pass the smell test, and DiNapoli will probably pull out of the election, encouraged, by the way, by the good government groups who want publicly financed elections.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's environmental community is ambivalent about funding provisions for conservation and environmental programs in the finalized state budget. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
The final budget signed by Governor Andrew Cuomo Tuesday morning includes $162 million for the State Environmental Protection Fund. That is a $9 million increase from last year's funding, bringing the total allocation to $162 million. But some, including Adirondack Council Executive Director Willie Janeway, would like to see it at a much higher funding level.
The $9 million is a great step in the right direction, but it is a small step. The ETF was at $255 million just a few years ago. A lot more needs to be done, and we look forward to working with our leaders to secure additional funding because there's still a big gap between the need and the available funds.
New York Public Interest Research Group Senior Environmental Associate Laura Height calls the environmental budget a mixed bag. She's pleased to see more funds for the EPF.
We know that our environmental needs far outpace the amount of funding that's available. Parks and open space, agency staffing, important programs to protect our air and water. We know that these programs aren't getting enough funding, but on the other hand, we're glad we got a little bit more.
What concerns Height is programmatic issues that are tied to the budget. One is the state superfund.
As the funds start to dry up, the cleanups slow down. And, you know, we're talking about communities across the state that are going to be held hostage to these toxic waste sites. The governor had proposed adding an additional 1 year of operating funds in this budget. Our group and others, the assembly, were calling for a long-term commitment of 10 years. And in the end, it's just not in the budget at all.
The New York League of Conservation Voters says the budget makes some progress but lacks environmental vision. It praises the increase to the EPF and $92.5 million in capital funds to state parks. But the group criticizes rejection of legislative proposals for clean energy funding and diversion of transit funds to pay debt. League spokesman Dan Hendrick says there was an equal mix of budget victories and losses, but it lacks a broad sustainability vision.
You go line by line, and, you know, there were some pluses and minuses. For example, the Environmental Protection Fund. That's a good example where there's an increase, and we're happy for the and grateful for the increase. Yet we go through this exercise every year, but there needs to be really much more of a commitment in Albany to think comprehensively, but also just to simply make the environment more of a priority in the state budget. Should we be coming back year after year to fight for $5 million in the midst of an enormous budget? We really need to be thinking more comprehensively and more robustly about the environment.
The Adirondack Council's Willie Janeway and NYPERG's Laura Height say there will be opportunities to address some of the budget oversights through legislative means.
They absolutely can address these post-budget. For the Brownfields program, it's not really a monetary issue. It's more programmatic changes. And that's what's been happening increasingly in the Capitol, is that the budget is being used as a vehicle not just to deal with funding issues, but a wide range of programmatic issues. But there's no reason at all why they can't deal with this as part of the regular legislative session.
On the non-budget issues, there are specific legislative opportunities. And in the budget arena, it's not too early to start now talking about a long-term plan to implement vision for meeting the environmental clean water infrastructure needs of the state of New York.
Environmental provisions in New York's budget also fund zoos, parks, and water and conservation districts.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Language in the recently approved New York State budget guarantees the closure of four prison facilities across the state. Now, some officials in the Southern Adirondack region are working to discover new uses for Mount McGregor Correctional Facility. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard with more.
The closure of the Mount McGregor prison, along with three other correctional facilities, was initially announced by the Cuomo administration in the summer of 2013. Since then, local and state officials, along with employees of the facility, have protested the closure to no avail. The recently signed state budget includes language to close the medium security facility in Saratoga County. Now, local officials are trying to carve out a different future for the site, which sits on 1,200 acres in the towns of Wilton, Moreau, and Corinth. Earlier this year, Empire State Development released a report on potential adaptive reuses of the property. Wilton Town Supervisor Art Johnson said he'd like the surrounding communities to work together on developing a business plan for the site.
You know, I've been in discussions with Empire State Development, and, you know, they'll be working towards a redevelopment plan for the prison. And I think an important part of that is the three communities that are involved up there, which is the town of Moreau, town of Wilton, and town of Corinth, come up with a viable business plan.
As part of the budget deal, $32 million would be provided to communities affected by prison closures. Prison property would also be considered a part of the Startup NY program, which would allow businesses to move to designated areas tax-free. Moreau Town Supervisor Preston Jenkins said the prison closure slated for July, coupled with the closure of the GE plant in Fort Edward next year, means a lot of town residents will be out of work. Jenkins said it would take a significant operation to move to the site in order to make up for the lost jobs.
There'd be zero tax benefits to us. So if it wasn't something to create a lot of jobs, it would be very difficult to think it was great for us.
Jenkins said he's still interested in an idea pitched to Empire State Development to allow the site to host possible casino development, though he said he's unclear of the sentiment from developers. Republican Assemblyman Jim Todisco said the site has many potential reuses.
It could be high tech. It could be related to manufacturing. There's a whole variety, and we just have to spread the word and let them know here's an opportunity to get into a facility where you're not going to be impacted by the usual high taxes for a small business.
Todisco says he's not against right-sizing of the New York State correctional system, but would like more involvement in the closure process. Todisco has authored a bill that would change state law to require increased involvement with the state legislature on developing a plan on the closure of any future prison facilities.
We'd be able to sit down with the governor with the next closings that take place, be a part of the planning process, and there would be a plan in place, and we would ratify that, mandated that it would have to come before the Senate and the Assembly, that plan, and we'd vote collectively on the plan itself. that we helped develop.
A version of the bill is sponsored in the Senate by Kathy Marchione and Hugh Farley, both Republicans. The New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision has said the closures are necessary as crime rates decrease, inmate populations decrease, and taxpayers are left to pay for empty beds.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
New York State has funded the Cortland County Public Bus Line to help transport Medicaid recipients to their medical appointments. But the county recently lost that money when New York started funding a centralized call-in service instead. And as the Innovation Trail's Monica Sandresky reports, that could have a big impact on some residents.
It's a drizzly day in Cortland. Joy Stout is leaning against the bus stop shelter in front of the courthouse, waiting for the number 5. Today's like every day. Dowd catches the 2:30 bus to head about 15 miles down the road.
My daughter lives at the trailer park there, up around the bend there, but I go to Cincinnati because she works at the dollar store, and I go out there and see her a lot.
She'll chat with her daughter at work, then walk to the social services office to hang clothes and empty garbage in exchange for food. Then she heads back on the 4:30 bus, only staying in Cincinnati for an hour.
Yeah. Let's get on the bus and I'll finish talking to you.
The $1 in there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Up until last year, New York State sent money to counties to help transport people on Medicaid to their doctor's appointments. Like a lot of rural counties, Cortland spent that money on its public transit system.
We're on Port Watson. We're going to be hitting McGraw pretty soon. Then we go to McGraw, Cincinnati, Willett, Marathon.
That's all changing. As part of Governor Cuomo's Medicaid redesign initiative, the state took back the Medicaid funds. Now the money is spent directly on each trip to the doctor. Patients call into a regional service that figures out the best way to get them to the doctor. Often, it's a private taxi. In Cortland County, that's left a $500,000 hole in the public transit budget. At his office in Cortland, head of public transit Dan Dineen is worried about the future of the bus line.
Any business loses 40% of their revenue, and you have to start looking at other avenues.
And that could mean partnering with a group with a high need for the bus system or making cuts. Right now, it's uncertain. The New York Department of Health is in charge of spending the state's Medicaid money. According to a department spokesman, the new system is the best way to get Medicaid patients to their appointments. But Dineen says the money was doing much more good before the change.
The public transportation system is designed for people's everyday lives, so it's not just to transport individuals to medical appointments, but to get to pharmacies and grocery stores.
Dineen says he's tried to explain the county's dilemma to the Department of Health, but got little response. Counties hit hardest use Medicaid for 15 to 40% of their public transit budget. Tioga County has already raised their prices. Tioga and Madison counties are considering shutting down their bus lines altogether. Joyce Dowd in Cortland County says she doesn't know what she'd do without the bus. Dowd has tried taking a local cab to see her daughter, but it was $120 round trip. She can't afford that. She's tried walking to Cincinnati, too.
You know, if I miss my bus, I walked from Marathon before, and then the cops says, where are you going? I said, well, I'm walking because, you know, I don't want to way home. You know, he was going to arrest me, and I said, really? I said, I'm not doing nothing wrong. I didn't commit a crime. You know, it's embarrassing.
Dowd can't work because of a learning disability, so she lives off Social Security and disability.
Oh, yeah, I see my grandson as much as I can, I mean, because if I don't, I want him to know who I am. And right now, he holds his hands out. And he'll come to me, and then he'll just look at me and laugh. He's funny, though. I love him. He's my little peanut.
Last week, the Cortland County Legislature voted to support a state Senate initiative allowing counties to opt out of the call-in service.
This is where I got to get off at.
I'm Monica Sandresky for the Innovation Trail.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1414. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.